Welcome to Wake Up with AI, the podcast where human-powered meets AI-assisted. Join your hosts, Chris Carolan, Nico Lafakis, and George B. Thomas, as we dive deep into the world of artificial intelligence. From the latest AI news to cutting-edge tools and skill sets, we are here to help business owners, marketers, and everyday individuals unlock their full potential with the power of AI. Let's get started.
Good morning. Happy Monday, October 14th, 2024. Wake up with AI. We're here with George and Nico. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. Doing very well.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back on the mic after the weekend. And man, you go away for like a couple days and just the whole AI world changes and you're like, can somebody hit the brakes on this bad boy? Just, but it ain't happening.
Nope. Yeah, no brakes.
That's what I love. Applied. I love the fact that you guys are finally on that bandwagon with me where it's just like, yeah, there really is that much that's changing that often despite what everybody else says.
I feel like Nico tied us to the back of his van and just started driving like 65 miles an hour is how I feel about this, but I'm down for it. I'm running as fast as I can.
Yeah, that's all we can do. I think just like HubSpot ecosystem, it's like not slowing down, folks. Like no matter how bad you want it to be. And I'd say companies like HubSpot, this is why they're not slowing down.
Oh, without a doubt.
They need to keep up as well.
Well, not only that, Chris, they need to keep up, but they also are using the tools that we're talking about to be able to go faster. Like, there's no way that HubSpot does what it did last year or the beginning of this year without some extremely, like, internally publicized use this to code. Like, I mean, there's just no way.
I agree. No,
I was saying the same thing last year and even this year, actually, not even that long ago, a couple months ago, when the explosion of features started. And it's funny because everybody's like, oh, it's product managers. It's all product managers. Really? I didn't know that product managers ran code and built out backends. I wasn't aware of that. I get that they are the ones bringing the ideas forward. I totally get that. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm saying that product managers don't have a role to play in the whole thing.
We love you.
Yes, we do. We absolutely do. It's just that the implementation of what it is you've brought forward has started happening at a much faster rate, which means that the processing of that is much faster, which means that someone is using some kind of tool to make the whole process go faster. So it's definitely, I'll put it to you this way, folks. It's not like HubSpot went out and hired a bunch of back-end devs.
No.
I didn't hear about that.
No, that wasn't okay. In the news. And also the other thing we know that didn't happen is nobody went out and had bionic finger surgery either. So like they can't type faster, but somebody can. ChatGPT is the fastest typist on the planet for $20 a month. So like, let's just put that out there.
Speaking of positive uses and positive outcomes of all this AI evolution, what's the news for today, Nico?
I love how you preface that with positive, almost as if to say, like, please give us some positive news today. I'm picking up what you're putting down. Okay, I will shoot for positive to neutral today. At worst, it's neutral. At worst, you kind of walk away like, oh, okay. But, you know, at best, you walk away like, huh, all right then. So it turns out, interestingly enough, it's funny because the guys always think that I'm going to be talking about one thing and then I slap them with something like 5 minutes before the show and it's like, hey, this is what I'm going to be talking about. See ya. So it turns out, thanks to a very long study that was done by some extremely smart people, one of which happened to be actually the lead tester happened to be from Apple. And turns out that the reasoning that's going on behind these models might not be as reasoning as you think. So the testing that was done was essentially, I'm really, really boiling this down for you. Essentially what was done was they took normal statements and normal questions that they would give to a model, but they added in an element of confusion. So an example would be Timmy had 5 red apples and then he had 5 oranges, but the apples were smaller than the oranges. How many did he have altogether? Very simple question. It's 10, right? 10 items altogether. But it's a matter of like the model saw and said, well, you got five apples are smaller. So maybe it started screwing it up. And it came back with this reasoning that included the size of the apples as part of the reasoning to the solution. So when they kept testing it, they found that the more, not necessarily the more they introduced a problem, but they found that the more they introduced a different type of contrary statement within what was going on, within the problem that was being asked to solve, the greater the drop-off rate. So there was this like reasoning of completion or like level of completion that went up to a certain degree in terms of all the different problems it could solve. And then all of a sudden there's this little curve in there of like, you know, yeah, but measuring out a distance. And by the way, it's also sunny outside. Right. And then all of a sudden it just dips and it's like, wow, okay, well, can't really handle that left turn. So is this reasoning? Because any normal person would be able to just disregard that and be like, okay, well, the size of the apples doesn't matter in comparison to how many items, or the time of day doesn't matter in comparison to how to the length of the distance that we're supposed to be measuring. All of that would just get disregarded and you would just focus on the problem. Similar to like an LSAT test, but even LSATs are like, they're logical, just interwoven, right?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. One, it's impossible to watch like a 45-minute video 10 minutes before the podcast. I'm just going to throw that out there, but I'm like, I want to watch
it. 2x speed.
I'm like, I want to watch this so bad. But here's the funny thing. I've watched enough and then listening to you to say the fact of like, oh, you mean they actually gave it the real world? Because like we battle with these same things, like, right? I have one marketing team. I have sales, you know, one sales team. If I have seven SQLs, how many SQLs do I really have? Dip. Like, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like,
and that's what I found funny too, is that like, okay, yeah, you're kind of saying it's not reasoning, but you're also at the same time, you know, we talked about last week that like, I look at this as a human brain. It's just an electronic human brain.
Yeah.
So you're also at the same time saying like my students having trouble learning.
Yeah. Wow. You mean like humans do? Here's the funny thing too, is like this on the back of something else that you sent where I was like, I went down a whole rabbit hole, by the way, of like there, it, I forget who it was. It might've been, I don't think it was Eric Schmidt. I think it was something else. It was one of the other videos that we were looking at. And he said, we're all capturing and coding data because knowledge is too large to actually be able to code. And I was like, wait a second. And so then I started to think about like the world that I live in. It's all about data hygiene, data cleansing, data collection. And I'm like, well, but that, then we always talk about like data interpretation. Well, why is that? Because data isn't knowledge. We need to actually apply the knowledge to the data that we're collecting. And so how do we do that? Well, with wisdom and insights. Well, so then I was like, well, how does the program, how does the system get wisdom or knowledge? Well, what if you added in activities? Wait a minute, there's activities in HubSpot. So I could look at activities over time and see patterns and I have data. Can I then turn that into knowledge? And if so, dude, I just went down a rabbit hole. Like, so I was like, what are the vectors that we as humans need to actually produce knowledge from the data that we're collecting every day in the conversations, the visuals, all of that? Because then I was like, as soon as you figure out how to code all of that, then all of a sudden we're not at the place where that article that you were mentioning ever gets talked about again, because it's not about data. It's not about patterns. It's about the insights and knowledge that comes from that data and patterns that it now has and can segment and slice and anyway.
Yeah. And it's a matter of like, well, how much of what we do is going to get sliced up like that? Right. And is it necessarily a bad thing that it can't reason as well? Is it a good thing? So that's why I say it's like, it is somewhat positive there. I'm sure that there are plenty of people out there that are just like, oh, well, that's what I thought. Not quite as smart, not quite as, you know, on the
ball. And are happy about it, by the way.
Yes.
And then there's others that are sad about it.
Like myself, a little bit. Not necessarily, though. I can't say that I'm sad about it. I am slightly surprised. I will say this much, which I do want to share and I will talk through, is what surprised me the most is where each model fell on this scale when this left turn was thrown in there. This is just a personal thing. It's the only reason that I'm showing this scale. I had no other reason to show it.
And if you're listening to this, I'll make sure Nico sends us a screenshot and we'll put it in the show notes.
There was no other reason to list it than to show that despite what everybody thinks and what everybody constantly talks about in terms of Google's the best, and nobody's going to beat them. Open source is the best. No one's ever going to beat them. O1 Preview's the best. No one's ever going to beat OpenAI. The only time anyone beats OpenAI, what we're looking at is a scale of where the problem was thrown in and how much it threw off the model, by what percentage it threw the model off. So the worst is Phi-3 models, specifically Phi-3 Mini, and it threw it off by over 65%. Then you've got your Gemma models. Those were getting thrown over by 55, 60%. GPT didn't even come into the picture until 4.0 Mini got thrown off by just right 40%, like literally on the dot. GPT-4 got thrown by 32%. Mistral came into the picture almost dead even with GPT-4.0. Llama 3, the 8 billion, 60% thrown off. Right. So Llama 3 represents pretty much the last, if you were able to see this graph, it's kind of broken down into three sections. The first section sort of being what I would consider the worst of the worst models, which includes not only Llama 3, but also Mathstral. Okay. For those of you who thought that Mathstral was really high in capability of reasoning because it can do like more complex math problems. The next set, I would say, is from Phi 2 up to Gemma 2. The 2 billion parameter model. So there's some really interesting things to note in here that like a 27 billion parameter model did horribly, but a 2 billion parameter model did half as bad. Looking at 4.0 Mini, it scores pretty much dead even with everybody else. And then there's the rest. You've got GPT-4.0. Mistral 7B actually beat that out. 4.0 came in at 32%. Mistral 7B came in at 30%. 01 Mini, right behind Mistral 7 billion. Mistral 7 billion version 1, as opposed to IT. Again, all three of them are right in that same category. But then when it comes to like the top performers, it's Mistral 7B, then it's Dot 3, and then 01 Gemma 7B, and then 01 Preview. 01 Preview is the only one that's under 20%.
Can I come at this like a normal human being?
Yeah.
Because when you threw up this chart, and as people are listening to this podcast, as a normal human being, I'm like, wait. There's that many models. Holy crap. And by the way, as you were talking, I'm like,
like all of them.
Well, yeah, I'm like, wait, that's actually just the ones that made it on this list. That's not even all the models. And so, and the reason I'm bringing this up, because I think so many people are like, there's these top three or four that always get the light of day, and that's what they're thinking about, and that's what they're potentially using. And there's just this whole other world that is like this undertow of what's happening here. And so, again, this is just another reason that people need to wake up, because it's bigger. There's more of it to it than you're probably seeing. Like, I literally am looking at this and I'm like, oh, we have the iceberg effect. Like, we see the top of the iceberg with this conversation and not like, anyway.
Yeah. Very much. Nah, I think like we talk about the application all the time. And that's why we're here talking about it every day, because there's going to be different applications for different people. It's going to resonate differently. But in regards to your, you know, data knowledge topic that you brought up, like, I think there's a decent comparison we made. Like, you know, people can go through the same 4 years of university and the same information, you know, is thrown at them. It's not knowledge yet, right? It's data being consumed. And if I choose to consume it in a very applied way during the 4 years, I end up at the end of the 4 years much farther ahead and much more able to apply it to my daily life versus the person who's just been in theory-based mode. And when we talk about knowledge and skills gap, that's often what we're talking about. It's like people are leaving university, leaving the traditional education without any applied knowledge of the things that they've learned, right? So that is same is true here, where they could be looking at the same 8 billion tokens, but you know, how they're put together and how they're designed and what the goals are of each model and the experience is all different. And that's why you see, you know, when Nico is saying from a 60% decrease to a 20% decrease, that's trust, right? That 20% decrease compared to the 60%, like three times better, like more trusted, you know, model based on that, you know, application that they're testing. So
it's interesting, Chris, when you say that, for some reason, the immediate thing that comes to my brain when you say trust, and especially in this world of AI, is that means we as humans need to be nimble. Because if you want to be using the best, the thing that you trust the most, then it might not be the same model week to week or month to month, depending, right? how much that trust is broken or not, dependent upon what you're doing, which leads me to, if you're listening to this or watching this and you don't have a backup model, like for instance, we're on the internet, things go down, things break. If you're really leaning into, this is how I do my work on a daily basis, and let's just say, for instance, ChatGPT goes down, are you done? Or do you have a backup that you can go and continue to get work done or not? Like, you have to be nimble where we're at right now.
Tell me that's a great segue into your skill of the day.
I'm not talking about nimble. So it's just something that came to mind. But the skill of the day, I'm super excited about this week, by the way. I did some pre-planning and I decided this week what I wanted to do is I wanted to go in an actual direction each day pertaining to the person. So like there's going to be a day that if you're listening or watching this and you're a creative, I'm talking to you. If you're an operations professional, I'm talking to you. If you're a sales rep, I'm talking to you. So I wanted to go in like specifics this week versus like generalities. And so this week we're actually talking to people who might be marketers and dealing with marketing data. So today, friends, we're diving into a skill that could be a real game changer for anyone in marketing data or business growth, AI-powered analytics. Whether you're using an all-in-one platform like HubSpot or juggling a mix of tools, AI has the power to transform the way you handle data and make smarter marketing decisions. And I hope you're making smart decisions. Not everyone listening to this podcast is a HubSpot user, by the way. We totally get that this is could be potentially out of the HubSpot ecosystem, and that's fine. But I think HubSpot is great at bringing analytics tools into one place, powered by AI in the background with features like predictive lead scoring, real-time sales forecasting, just by the way, to name a few. Tools like Breeze Copilot assist with tasks across CRM data, while Breeze agents help automate workflows for content creation, social media, customer service, making everything seamless. And more importantly, guess what? Measurable. But for those pulling data from different platforms, email, social media, ads, AI analytics really steps in to tie it all together, saving you from the headache of piecing together separate reports. How many of you are spending so much time trying to piece together separate reports or even just do your reporting in general? Or how many of you just ignore it? Anyway, AI helps you see the big picture, providing insights like identifying high-performing channels and understanding customer behavior across platforms. Nico, Chris, podcast listeners, this one's for you. Data can be overwhelming. Numbers flying at you, endless charts, reports eating up your time, all while managing other marketing tasks. We get it. I've lived your life. I still live your life. And you know, this reminds me of something someone once told me earlier in my career, guys. They said these words to me: you'd be a great marketer if you could just learn to leverage the mathematics of it all. And honestly, I tried, but math and I have never been the best of friends. I mean, I can count to 10 on most days, but I'm more of the creative marketer in the corner with his crayons and sketchbook. That's the guy that I am. So now, I just wonder, maybe can I become a great marketer? Not because I mastered all the math myself, but because I have an AI assistant that can help me with all that number crunching. See, it's like I've got this math whiz sidekick, pun intended, who never judges me for needing a calculator. And that's where AI has the potential to save the day, helping us analyze faster and smarter so that we can focus on what we do best: strategy and creativity. With AI and analytics tools like HubSpot, Google Analytics 4, and so many others, you're no longer stuck tracking numbers manually. AI analytics has the potential to segment audiences, analyze trends, and monitor campaigns in real time, all while you might be taking a nap or getting a good night's sleep. Imagine launching a big marketing campaign. Emails are out, social posts are live, ads are running. The big question that you as the human have is, how's it performing? AI can pull the data from all sources, analyze patterns, and give you instant insights. It's like having a 24/7 data analyst, but without the cost, because we know that data analysts are not cheap. Your AI analytics tool runs in the background, collecting data from email, social ads, website traffic, actively spotting trends, and flagging what needs attention. For example, it might find that your under 35 audience is opening emails but not clicking through. Are any of us on this podcast under 35? Anyway, with that insight, you can adjust your messaging or retarget that group on the fly. That's what makes AI powerful. It turns reactive processes into proactive actions. Now, here's three takeaways as we kind of land the plane here. AI saves you time and effort. It automates tedious tasks, giving you more time for strategy. Real-time insights lead to real-time action. No more waiting around. AI provides instant feedback, so stay agile. That's the second thing. AI helps you spot trends and adapt while campaigns are still live. And imagine a world where you're not bogged down by tedious work of pulling numbers, but instead focused on strategy and creativity. All right, ladies and gentlemen, AI analytics, pay attention to it. That's your AI skill that pays the bills for today.
That's a good one. One of the best examples of how this is not a replacement. This is doing things you always knew you should be doing and you haven't been doing them. Analytics and gaining insights from the data to create that knowledge that we talked about earlier to actually action on things. Super important.
I want to talk about something you just said, Chris, before we go to the next section. Because as I've been creating and marinating on these skills that pay the bills, and as I've been being drugged tied to Nico's van at 65 miles an hour, I've noticed a pattern happening. And I want to just put it out into the world and ask when we stop doing this, when the just humans get tired of hearing it. The amount of it's not going to steal your job that speakers are saying from the stage, the amount that we're saying it on the mic. Like, when does that just become, all right, I get it, enough already, right? Nico's shaking his head, no. I'm like, we probably still have to keep people, humans, at ease. But do we reach a time where it's like people are annoyed to hearing that? It's something that I'm going to pay attention to as we move forward. But I feel like I have several years before I have to worry about people not wanting to hear that anymore.
Or not needing to hear it.
Yeah.
Wanting to hear it. I don't know. The reason that I shake my head is because I see it too. I see it all the time. And initially I struggled with it. And there are parts of sectors that will disappear. What does this look like? Let's not talk about, look, when I talk about this stuff, I talk about automation because it's across the board. It's ridiculous. So let's put it in a very, very visually understandable way. There is a franchise called Cali Burger. Cali Burger promotes the fact that it is nearly 100% automated. Fries are made by a machine, burgers made by a machine, most of the stuff made by machines. The real only thing I think that's made by humans is like hot dogs and packaging your food together and being given to you. So there's literally maybe two, three people tops working at this thing. And most the job for the one person is pretty much just picking stuff up and looking after the dining room. So the fry guy is done. The burger flipper is done. Raise your hand if you wanted to be a fry guy. Raise your hand if you wanted to be a burger flipper.
I mean, I have been a fry guy and a burger guy, and I didn't want to be those when I was those, but I had to, right?
Right. Those were jobs out of necessity. They're not jobs that people want to do, right? Think about all the sports that exist now that didn't even exist a year ago. I don't want to point it out, but for crying out loud, we have breakdancing in the Olympics, right? There are these. Yeah,
don't get me started.
I know. Are these breakthroughs in various areas where we're out with the old and with the new? Destruction breeds creation. There is always balance to these things, always, right? And the only reason I say that it's going to be tough is because we have, you know, what I've already described as like the they're no longer in the shadows. Now they're voicing their opinions pretty loudly from all the major media outlets. We have these, you know, Luddites that are just constantly talking about AI taking jobs and AI, you know, taking automation, taking jobs. And, oh, Amazon just opened up another, you know, 80% automated factory. And there's only going to be, you know, so many people working there, this, that, and the other. People need to move on from these menial jobs that you don't like to begin with. It's the same to me, not to like, I'm just touching on it a tiny bit. It's the same to me as when people talked about, you know, immigrant labor taking jobs. Yeah, okay, that might have been true initially for like the 3 to 5 year transition period, but that's what it was. It was a transition period of people here stateside that didn't want to do those jobs anymore versus people who were coming non-stateside, totally willing to do those jobs, right? Same thing. It's like, look, I don't know. If you wanted to be an agriculturalist, it's probably because you wanted to be. I don't know anybody that woke up one day and said, man, you know what it is? Mowing lawns all my life.
Yeah.
Every day, all day.
That's dream, brother.
Right? Now, maybe there are people out there that everybody for something, right? But yes, to George's point, it's out like the people who are in the know, the people who are closest to this technology, try to wrap your heads around this one. They are all shooting towards a $35 trillion economy. just from AI. We're talking about adding $35 trillion to the overall economy. Okay, so you don't do that by not having more stuff, more jobs, more something. And if you want to call them jobs, that like even that is going to change.
Chris, I got one thing I got to say, and then I'll shut up and we can do whatever we're going to do. But as somebody in my younger years who walked around with a rolled up piece of laminate or a very large cardboard box in a boom box that was not breakdancing in the Olympics, I'm just going out on a limb. I'm letting everybody know. Been there, done that, done the caterpillar, the backspin, the windmill. Like, no, just stop it. Like, this isn't even about AI, but just Olympics. Wake up, please.
Oh, man. Yeah, we'll close out on an AI win. I started listening to the book that George recommended, AI, AI-driven leaders. And in there, it talks about, like, since 1950, like 60% of those jobs don't exist anymore, right? So like, it's not new. It's that this transition that we're having to make. And also it got me to think about like, hey, let me just start going to AI with some of my biggest challenges. Like, and a big challenge I have right now is I've always had, you know, juggling priorities, getting focused, staying organized. And so I built out a, you know, personal and professional, you know, growth coach and said, hey, these are all the things I want to do. I called it the dreamer and the business leader. I keep my head in the clouds and sometimes I need to get business done. So created this thing using Cloud Projects and I've already got a weekly schedule. And this is the difference because I've done this before. Why is it going to work this time? You know, it's still me having to go through the things and build the habits. But I feel like this is different because now instead of just it all being on me where I can go create the Google Calendar, the ideal schedule, and then if anything changes, I have to process myself how to change the whole thing that I just spent all the time on instead of continually building this foundation with AI saying, hey, this happened today. I need to know how to fit it into the schedule or this is no longer a priority. Like, help me figure out how to change that. So excited to, you know, start and end every day with that AI business coach. So that's my AI win for the day. And with that, hopefully examples like that and more show and tell use cases and the skills to pay the bills, all these things add up to help you wake up with AI. Have a great day, everybody.
That's a wrap for this episode of Wake Up with AI. We hope that you feel a little more inspired, a little more informed, and a whole lot more excited about how AI can augment your life and business. Always remember that this journey is just the beginning and that we are right here with you every step of the way. If you love today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review. You can also connect with us on social media to stay updated with all things AI. Until next time, stay curious. Stay empowered and wake up with AI.